We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
How the population and demographics of New Orleans have changed since Katrina, and not just in terms of area, but in terms of demographics, of race and nationality and ethnicity, et cetera. Allison Plyer joins us now, a chief demographer at the Data Center. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for coming back. I guess we'll start like maybe from the very, very beginning, and that is how many people – let's go back to Katrina in 2005, okay? We had this – that's when I learned what the word diaspora was, and it was used in this setting of people that were displaced and went to Houston and went to Atlanta and so forth. Did a lot of people find new homes in New Orleans, and not in New Orleans, rather, but in Houston and Atlanta, and that's become their life and their families' lives since then?
We certainly think so. The way the federal statistical system works is we don't actually track people in that kind of detail, right? So all we know is, you know, the net number of people who live in New Orleans now compared to before Katrina. We have about 100,000 fewer people as compared to, you know, the 2000 census, which was before Katrina. So that, you know, people that those are obviously not exactly the same people. So there could be even more than that who have moved elsewhere and or, you know, passed away. But there were some initial numbers from FEMA, you know, where people were reporting where they were. And there were certainly big concentrations in even Baton Rouge and Houston, Atlanta. But really, you know, there were people spread all over the country initially, and certainly some of them have settled in where they are.
And I guess that was a combination of you had nothing else, maybe you had nothing to come back to. Maybe you found that the quality of life there was better, and maybe you could afford to live there where you couldn't afford to live here.
Yeah, well, I think at that point, affording to live here, you know, meant affording to, you know, rebuild your home or especially right away, you know, get a rental that was much more expensive because there was, you know, the supply of rentals got, you know, destroyed, right? So, initially, the first people who came back were people who had some resources. And so when we looked at the city demographics the first year and two after Katrina, we, you know, our poverty rates were much lower because a lot of those, you know, and the income rates in general were higher because those were the folks who were able to come back. Yeah. But then, you know, there were lots of anecdotes of people in, you know, Houston and elsewhere who found, you know, they thought, you know, they were getting better services for their kids in their schools and they were able to afford housing and, yeah, they stayed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see the story in from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune, and you were quoted in it, but there's a paragraph before they quote you that says, New Orleans finds itself at an existential crossroads. And if you look at, I guess, what's going on with crime in the city, is as well as everything else and the affordable housing and culture bears, if you will, people that, and I think I mentioned this to you before, and I know somebody specifically that I'm thinking of that loves the culture bears of New Orleans so long as they don't move in next to them. Is New Orleans at an existential crossroads? Are we at a tipping point here?
Well, you know, I mean, I think New Orleans is always at an existential crossroads, right? Mm-hmm. I think probably since its inception, because of, you know, the flood risk that we have always faced. I wouldn't say this moment is, you know, dramatically different than, you know, many moments in the city's history, including, you know, right after Katrina, moments that many of us lived through. But I think, you know, just like any city, there's a lot going on that we need to deal with. Crime has of course increased, as everybody's aware, but it is increasing nationwide, right? So, so it's not just an issue here. And so getting at kind of like, you know, what are the causes of that, you know, and really being savvy about it is smart, rather than just some sort of knee jerk, oh, we have to solve it here because it's happening everywhere. I think that the folks are facing sort of a double whammy in terms of, you know, real estate prices went up in the city and certainly nationwide, a lot due to the availability of credit after the pandemic hit and the way that the federal government bought out all the bonds and whatnot. So, a lot of people bought real estate, and then that made the prices go up. And then on the other hand, we've always undercompensated our culture bearers, our musicians, the folks in our tourism industry in general. And that was sustainable while we had a lot of low-cost, non-subsidized housing in the city that was mostly kind of rundown and substandard and all that before Katrina. But in the last 16 years, it's gotten just increasingly more expensive to live here, and it's unaffordable for a lot of the people that we care about who make our culture.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody goes to Atlanta or Houston because of the vibe of the city, do they?
Well, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't want to speak for everybody, but. Yeah, I mean, there's no place like New Orleans. And I mean, I think virtually everybody can agree to that, right? Whether you live here or you don't. I mean, there's a way that people are like gracious and engaging and fun and then, you know, create all this amazing culture. And, you know, there's wonderful art and other things in other cities, but New Orleans is unique.
So let's look at the metro area. What has changed since Katrina dramatically? I know St. Bernard has changed a lot. I don't know if more people are moving back in there or not, but I don't know what kind of population losses they had, Ninth Ward, et cetera. What do the numbers show?
Sure. So St. Bernard is a really interesting case because they had 67,000 people before Katrina in the census 2000, and the most recent census last year, or 2020, 43,000, almost 44. Mm. So they've lost about 23,000 people. And then, of course, you know, that's a net loss, right? Because they have very changing demographics. Interesting situation there because I think everybody probably remembers, you know, they put in some ordinances early on that were deemed to be discriminatory, and because they were only going to allow homeowners to rent to blood relatives. And the parish had been predominantly white. It was deemed discriminatory, and now they have taken a very proactive stance at encouraging diversity. They've really completely changed their approach, and the Black population has grown substantially there. The Hispanic population has grown substantially there. So, while it used to be, I don't have the number in front of me, but more
Section
than
eight.
Probably about,
no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the situation is with Section 8.
Let me just jump in. I remember a big dust up about Section 8 housing in St. Bernard Parish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if now both Black and Hispanic populations, if it's home ownership there as opposed to, say, government subsidized housing, or do you know?
I don't know for sure, but I do know that there are programs that are promoting home ownership and that they're actively encouraging people of color to buy and succeeding. So, the housing stock there is less expensive than it is in New Orleans, right? So it's a very good option for someone who's middle income and, you know, wants to own a home. So, yeah, they've got a lot. About 26% of the population now is African-American. 14% is Hispanic. And just barely half is white at this point, which is an enormous change for St. Bernard Parish.
Let me take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion of how the metro area has changed since Katrina. I want to look at specifically East and West Bank in New Orleans, and then we'll move on from there. And I don't know if you can answer this or not, Allison, but I always wondered about businesses, and I'll still pass areas today where it seemed as though everything was going fine with the business, but then after Katrina, they just shut it down on the West Bank, which is where a lot of people were living after, and I just didn't understand how that happened. Megan Boudreaux is our guest, founder of the crew. Allison. Allison Plyer is our guest, chief demographer at the Data Center. I'm going to get some new glasses. We're talking about the population and demographics of New Orleans, how they've changed since Katrina, and we'll be right back. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. 9:26 here at WWL, highs of 66 today and tomorrow, so it's going to be some beautiful weather. Get outside, do something. Saturday, some rain moves in, and then Sunday, get ready. Buckle up, buttercup. Windy and colder, highs of 46, and then lows Sunday night, going into Martin Luther King Day, 28 on the North Shore, 34 in the South Shore. We're talking about demographic shifts in the metropolitan area after Katrina, now that they've had some time to review all of this data. Allison Plyer is our guest, chief demographer at the Data Center. Allison, what about differences between the East and West Bank of Orleans Parish themselves?
Yeah, so, I think everybody knows that, after Katrina and through, 2010, the West Bank really boomed because a lot of people, moved over there. As they were rebuilding their homes on the East Bank. But now when we look at the numbers on the West Bank, they're actually lower than they were in 2000, right? So between 70 and 100, south of 100%, but above 70% of what they were, yeah. So they've lost some population over there on the West Bank.
And is that something that is that the way it's going to be from now on? Because again, I'm a little bit confused. People moved over there to fix their houses, but then go through that again for me, because I'm a little bit confused. I didn't get that.
Yeah, so a lot of folks flooded out, of course, on the East Bank, and then took some temporary residences, temporary for them anyway. They were there for some years, it looks like. So maybe they, rented an apartment or even rented a home while they were rebuilding on the East Bank, and then have subsequently moved back to the East Bank. However that came about or what the specifics were, what we know is that the population of the West Bank now is actually lower than it was pre-Katrina. When we kind of look at a map of the city and you see that there's a lot more concentrated population in the CBD and the Warehouse District, there's actually even more more population now than there was pre-Katrina in the Audubon area and around the universities and also out by the lakefront. And some of that is, some of those are college dorms by the universities and out by UNO. The colleges have boomed in terms of the number of students that they have in dorms. It's really an impressive growth. But beyond that, there's a lot more people in that, everybody knows, right? You go down to the Warehouse District and wow, so many condos and apartments, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole city is sort of differently settled at this point than it was in 2000.
Is that due to the, they call it the sliver on the river, the part that won't flood, or is that due to baby boomers that are retiring and downsizing and want to live closer to the city? Because, again, with the problems the city is experiencing, you would think there would be a mass exodus, but that's not happening, right?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on which problem you're talking about, right? Would there be a mass exodus because of the flooding issues that we experience, right? And because those, of course, have been going on for some years.
Well, here's the thing, Allison. I get texts daily from people that say, that's it, another carjacking. I've had it. I'm moving out of Orleans Parish. Of course, people say that they're going to leave the country when X candidate gets elected or Y candidate gets elected, and they don't do that either. So I guess maybe a lot of that is venting and not really followed by action.
Yeah, it could be. And I think, you know, that's a good analogy. People say things and don't necessarily do them. And, you know, we don't have the data that's up this like to this very minute. Right. As to we don't there's always like a lag of about a year in the data. So we don't know if there's been like a mass exodus out of Orleans Parish in the last year. We won't know that. And well, we'll get some data in March. And we'll probably have to wait until the following March to actually see that kind of change. So. So, but that said, rarely do the numbers show a mass exodus unless there's an event like Katrina itself, which literally caused a mass exodus, right? There's, you know, city after city after city has had problems, you know, even in our recent memory, right? In the 70s, was it the 70s, a huge crime in New York and whatnot. You still don't see a mass exodus. You don't, you know, there might be some incremental over time decline in population, but yeah, the numbers don't have those big jumps unless there's something like Katrina that floods the whole place.
So after Katrina, and of course that was a flood because the levees broke because of the Corps of Engineers, the flood protection system's been greatly increased. People moved to the North Shore, correct? But then it seems as though we're getting hit with a hurricane every year. I think that's the new normal. I hope I'm wrong. If you look at the surrounding areas, St. John the Baptist Parish, St. Charles Parish, I don't want to leave anybody out, down south, Thibodeau, Terrebonne, et cetera. What effect, does that have a great evening effect, even it out, or are people still, say, flocking to the North Shore? Because I know we talked to Mike Cooper earlier, and he's trying to put a hold on zoning so that maybe where one house per acre would be allowed, he doesn't want that subdivided into smaller areas and more houses.
Well, you know, yeah, certainly the population in St. Tammany has boomed in the last couple of decades. It went from about 190 in before Katrina to 265. So that's by far the most growth of any, you know, part of the metro area. And like you said, you know, those folks experience hurricanes too, depending on where they are in the parish. They experience flooding as well. So, you know, those are challenges for the whole metro area. You know, we're lucky that we're within the federal levee system. And you know, the St. Tammany Parish is not. But, yeah, it's, I mean, you know, the big challenge, I think, is to think about, like, what is it that keeps people in a region or draws people to a region? And regardless of climate risk, if there are work opportunities, people will come here. They will, if they can afford to, choose, you know, a safer place within the region, right? But people will come when there are jobs. And, you know, given what we have in terms of, you know, the oil and gas infrastructure and potentially, you know, and all the coastal restoration work, you know, there's going to be jobs here for a long time. And so the question is, where are people going to settle within the metro area when they are here because of the economic opportunities?
What I think is fascinating about the work you do is that, you know, individuals are not predictable, but groups of individuals are. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is accurate. And, you know, individuals are somewhat predictable in that, you know, we're very, very likely to do in the future whatever we've done in the past. So as we can probably all realize, right? So sometimes we'll make change, but we you know, it requires a concerted effort and intentionality. But yeah, groups of people are very predictable, and I do find that really interesting.
All right, let me take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Jefferson Parish and cultural changes, I guess, the ethnicity changes of Jefferson Parish, et cetera, and the expansive growth that Louisiana has had with one demographic group, but yet it still trails the rest of the country. And what does that portend for the future? We're talking about Allison Plyer, chief demographer at the Data Center. You may be able to guess what demographic group I'm talking about. You'll see when we come back if you're right. 9:35, 25 till 10, traffic now on WWL. 42, 18 before 10, talking to our guest, Allison Plyer, a chief demographer at the Data Center, about how the population and demographics of New Orleans have changed since Katrina. And let's talk about Jefferson Parish, Allison, and one group that is responsible for a lot of growth in the state and in Jefferson Parish, but yet still, in terms of overall population of the state, lags behind the rest of the United States, and that would be the Hispanic population, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, the Hispanic population has, it's about, tripled since Katrina in Jefferson Parish. It's now about 18% of the parish with 80,000 people. Yeah.
And there's, are Hispanics primary? And I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know if I should say Hispanic or Latino. What do you demographers say?
It's tricky, right? Because then some folks say Latinx, right? Because the Latino implies masculine, but mm-hmm. a lot of Latinos don't even know the word Latinx. So it's not something that's really caught on with that group. So for that reason, we stick with Hispanic.
Okay, Hispanic. So yeah. Along those lines, that would be people from just South America, Central and South America, or anybody that speaks Spanish. And I'm not trying to be silly here. How would you define that?
Right. Yeah. So Hispanic, these are all, of course, people self-identifying. Mm-hmm. People can indicate, that they're Hispanic if they are from Spain as well. So, but the vast majority, obviously, are people from Central and South America and Mexico. Mm-hmm.
So whenever that comes up, the first thing people are going to say, I don't know if it's an elephant in the room or not, but they're going to talk about people being here legally. And is there any data that's available that shows who is here legally or who is here illegally? Or is that just an estimate or et cetera? Talk about that, if you will, because I know people are concerned about that.
Yeah, there's been, a number of studies to get at kind of, roughly what that number is. And nationwide, as I recall, it's about 11 million or something, which is a very small percentage of the total Hispanic population in the country. And I think we all know that, right? We all have met and maybe have, folks that we work with who are Hispanic and who are obviously, documented, right? Some of the undocumented folks might include some of the people that we see doing, roof repairs and whatnot. They do tend to be a very kind of mobile labor force that comes or is recruited when we have a big hurricane and come to do debris removal and roof repair. But a lot of those people are actually documented as well. So there's a little bit of both. But yeah, I know people are concerned about that, but they should be aware it's a very small percentage of the Hispanic population in general.
Is there any reason why Jefferson Parish or Kenner is a particularly attractive place for Hispanics to live?
Yeah, so what we find demographically nationwide is that Hispanic folks tend to settle in what are called inner ring suburbs, right? So they're the older suburbs like Jefferson Parish, right? The housing stock is like from the 50s and 60s. It's become affordable, right? As it's become a little older, the housing stock. And so without any sort of subsidy or anything, it's attractive. And, Hispanic folks, also are kind of aware of the concerns about crime in cities, and therefore tend to think, let's not settle in the city, let's settle in suburbs. And once you get folks, sort of a group of folks, then, you see businesses crop up to serve them, and then that attracts more folks, right? So you get kind of that nucleus, and then the other folks who either know or don't know, but just, individuals there, they end up settling there as well.
And for people that, for whatever reason, may not like Hispanic people because, and I just get the text here, and I hate to even say it that way, and I think a lot of it has to do with language because they don't understand the language, but nearly 85,000 Hispanic people moved to Louisiana between 2000 and 2010, and without that, the state would have had a net loss of people, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think that that's a really important point that you're making. You know, in general, the Hispanic population is, across the nation, is growing very fast, mostly because of births to people who already live here, not because of immigration. And in fact, immigration trends have gone down dramatically, even, you know, certainly during the time that President Trump was president, but even before that, right? So, but still the population is booming, and that's because of births to people who already live here, the vast majority of whom are documented, right, citizens, right? So, you know, I'm sorry. Now I've forgotten your question. Silly me. Did I go off on a tangent?
No. That's okay. I guess the question was about the net loss, where the state would be down 20,000 people net were it not for the influx of Hispanic people.
Right. That's right. That's why I brought that up. And so, you know, what we need to know about the demographics of the United States is that, you know, the baby boomers, who about 80% of whom are white, right, are aging and obviously are, you know, well beyond childbearing age. And so the people who are childbearing age, we have fewer white folks who are childbearing and more people who are diverse and particularly Hispanic. So if a community is experiencing declining population, their best bet for attracting folks is to attract people of color. Because, I mean, unless, you know, you're Palm Springs and you have million-dollar homes and all you want is, you know, wealthy white folks, for example, most communities need to attract a diverse population. Otherwise, they're just going to lose population. And so that's exactly what you're seeing in those Louisiana numbers.
Which leads to different considerations, and I'm reading a story here from NOLA.com. Nearly a third of the Jefferson Parish School District's 81 campuses have majority Hispanic enrollment. Two schools, Terrytown Elementary on the West Bank and Green Park Elementary in Metairie, have Hispanic student populations of more than 70%. And if that's the case, that necessitates changes, I would think, in terms of bilingual teachers, or certainly if not Spanish speaking, multi language teachers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm not an expert at schools, but I would say just generally, you know, yes, we need to make sure that we're investing in young people who are very diverse. That's who our upcoming workforce will be, right? And so if we want them to, you know, be able to be excellent nurses and maybe doctors and, you know, help us as we age, right, then we need them, you know, we need them to be and get really good educational foundation. And, you know, I think it's a little short-sighted that some people, as they age and then their own kids aren't in public school anymore, and then they kind of start resenting paying taxes and they, you know, don't want to really invest in the public schools. But like, those public school students are the ones who are going to, you know, be, you know, attending to us in hospitals. They're going to be working in restaurants. They're going to be, you know, maybe making cars, right? So we need people to be really skilled. And so making sure that we're really investing in that diverse community in Jefferson is really going to be to everybody's benefit.
So quickly, before we let you go, in terms of trends, I would think the country is going to, and the state and maybe the parishes are going to become increasingly more Hispanic. Is that where the trend is headed?
Yes, that's definitely. Yeah, that's where the trend is headed. Mm-hmm. The birth rates among the black population are really kind of, you know, I know the stereotype is, you know, that black families are enormous, but that's not the case. White families have very few children on average. Black families, you know, kind of your average sort of two, whereas Hispanic families have the larger families. And so, yes, in the future, we're going to be increasingly diverse and less white over time, just the whole nation. So, yeah, a lot of communities have figured that out and figured out how to make sure that they, you know, provide services in different languages, you know, provide training for jobs, you know, provide good education because they, you know, they want to thrive in the future.
So would it be accurate to take away from this that for people that are concerned with increasing Hispanic populations for whatever reason, that they're, but for that, the state would have lost population. And the other thing is that this is the new normal, and that because of the larger families that that Hispanic people are having, that means the Hispanic population is going to increase. And that doesn't necessarily, you can't infer from that that people are pouring over the border, but rather that Hispanic families of people that are already here legally are expanding at a more rapid rate than others and a larger rate, and therefore we're going to see more Hispanic people.
Yeah, you summed that up incredibly well. Exactly.
Well, let's quit while we're ahead.
All right.
Thank you, Allison. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you, Tommy. Thank you.
Thank you. Allison Plyer, Chief Demographer at the Data Center. We'll take a break, then we'll find out what Noel Norman has coming up for us today here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.